Switching hats. This is our last week in the series where we're looking at how our spirituality can be life-giving. And next week, Dave Blackburn will be preaching. So look forward to that. Last week, we looked at life-giving study, and we saw that we aren't set free by our emotions. We aren't set free by our experiences because it is the truth that sets us free. And this week, we are looking at simplicity. And for those of you who know me, simplicity is one of my favorite topics. The background image on my laptop is a quote from Leonardo da Vinci: simplicity is the ultimate sophistication, although he probably said it in Italian. One of my favorite books on economics is Small is Beautiful. One of my favorite books about the church is called Simple Church. When I was a computer programmer, I was always the one asking, how can we simplify this and streamline this, not saying we need to add these seven features. When I do a wedding, I always ask, what style do you want? But my default is simple yet meaningful. One of my favorite engineering stories comes from an MIT class. The professor asked the class to improve the hot glue gun. That was their task. And so, you know, some people added advanced electronics to ensure that the flow rate managed exactly the same as this little digital dial they could put up, or added a customizable nozzles or a better temperature regulator. All these different electronic, you know, gadgets were added to the hot glue gun. But my favorite one was the student who figured out how to reduce it down to just three parts while still making it effective. That's real engineering. I love simple yet effective. It requires true insight into the nature of a problem to devise its simplest solution. I mean, almost anyone could solve a problem given infinite budget and infinite time, but if you've only got a paperclip and some duct tape, call MacGyver. So how can we be MacGyvers in life? How can we see the simplest effective solution? How can we live fully yet simply? Luke chapter 9. If you are able, please stand for the reading from the gospel. Then Jesus called the 12 together, gave them power and authority over all demons and to cure diseases. He sent them out to proclaim the kingdom of God and to heal. And he said to them, take nothing for your journey. No staff, nor bag, nor bread, nor money, not even an extra tunic. Whatever house you enter, stay there and leave from there. And wherever they do not welcome you, as you're leaving that town, shake the dust off your feet as a testimony against them. They departed and went through the villages, bringing the good news and curing diseases everywhere. You may be seated. Our second reading today is from 2 Kings chapter 2, the end of the greatest prophet's life, Elijah. When they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, two different people, Elijah, Elisha, tell me what I may do for you before I am taken from you. And Elisha said, please let me inherit a double share of your spirit. He responded, you've asked a hard thing, yet if you see me as I'm being taken from you, it will be granted to you. If not, it will not. As they continued walking and talking, a chariot of fire and horses of fire separated the two of them, and Elijah ascended in a whirlwind into heaven. And Elisha kept watching and crying out, Father, Father, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen. But when he could no longer see him, he grasped his own clothes, tore them into two pieces. He picked up the mantle of Elijah that had fallen from him, went back, stood on the bank of the Jordan. He took the mantle of Elijah that had fallen from him, struck the water, saying, where is the Lord, the God of Elijah? And when he struck the water was parted to the one side and to the other, and Elisha went over. When the company of prophets who were at Jericho saw him at a distance, they declared, the spirit of Elijah rests upon him. They came to meet him, bowed to the ground before him. This is the word of the Lord, so thanks be to God. As you know, I am a data geek. I'm a geek in many ways, but especially data. Love to look at studies and read research articles. Love to have, you know, data-driven decisions here in the church. But there's always the danger of misunderstanding cause and effect. For example, there have been multiple studies that show that when there are more books in a household, that kids do better in school. And so there are a lot of times where politicians have taken that information and said, if the state pays to send two books to every child, that will make all of the kids smarter. The big problem, though, is that more books isn't actually the cause of this effect, because if the parents aren't reading the books with the kids, they do nothing other than be very effective state-subsidized dust collectors. You can also use them as paperweights, even doorstops. They are quite useful nonetheless. Books don't make kids smarter in school. Parents engaging with their kids by reading to them, that helps them do better in school. There's a big difference. And you know, I have the privilege of meeting with families before we do baptisms here, and I always ask what hopes they have for their child, and we get a lot of, you know, answers like, I hope they grow up healthy, and I hope they grow up and meet someone, I hope they get a job. And easily, though, the number one hope is, I hope they're happy. That is the undisputed heavyweight champion of the parental hope world. I hope my kids grow up to be happy. But that begs the question, how do we help them be happy? What is happy? Well, let me tell you, when I was a kid, I was little, I knew exactly what would make me happy. Our friends had the latest, greatest toy, Clip Clop, the Wonder Horse. You could ride Clip Clop, it was mounted on springs, and even if you got fast enough, it would give a 1980s high technology, nee! It doesn't get any better than that. And my brother and I loved Clip Clop whenever we were over at our friend's house, and so we begged our parents, please get us Clip Clop the Wonder Horse. We begged them over and over and over again. Finally, for Christmas, Clip Clop was there. And we proceeded to ride it twice, and never again. Clip Clop didn't make us happy. We just knew that we would be finally happy and fulfilled if we had that latest toy just like our friends, but we didn't care about it once we had it. It's kind of like if you have a movie you love and you buy it so that you've got it on disc, you can watch it anytime, but then you never watch it until it's on TV and you watch it with the commercials. Ever done that? Retail therapy doesn't work. The boost of happiness you get from buying something, and you'll get a little boost, but it doesn't last very long. It's got a very short half-life. Clip-clop won't make you happy. Having more books in the house won't make you smarter. I can't tell you how many times my kids have received a new, you know, present in the mail, and they play with the box longer than they play with the actual present. More stuff doesn't make you happy. Jesus tells his disciples, take nothing for your journey, no staff, nor bag, nor bread, nor money, not even an extra tunic. He's telling them that they should worry more about their message than their wardrobe. They should worry more about their mission than their bank account. They should worry more about helping others than making sure they get their due. Richard Byrd, who was a polar explorer, spent a lot of time wandering alone and Antarctica, once wrote in his diary, I am learning that a man can live profoundly without masses of things. Think about that. He didn't say that a man can just barely survive without masses of things. He didn't say that you can just scratch out an existence without masses of things. He said a man can live profoundly without masses of things. And that's exactly what Jesus was telling his disciples. And that's exactly what Paul wrote to the church in Philippi, the first reading we heard. Paul wrote, I have learned to be content with whatever I have. I know what it is to have little. I know what it is to have plenty. In any and all circumstances, I have learned the secret of being well fed or of going hungry, of having plenty or being in need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. You can live profoundly, whether you have Clip Clop the Wonder Horse or not. And just sending those books to a house won't make kids smarter. The latest toy won't make kids happier. That's a very different mindset. Richard Foster writes that simplicity is an inward reality, a unity between yourself and God, and that results in a visible lifestyle. So the goal isn't to provide more of the latest toys. The goal isn't to get your kid on all the sports clubs possible, to maximize their opportunities. Those things will move the happiness dial this much. Not a whole lot. The goal is to help your kid or your grandkid or even yourself live profoundly, no matter how many things you have amassed. But what does that look like? What does it mean to live profoundly? I mean, it's a lot easier to say that I've done my job as a parent if I've got all of the latest toys in the house and I've got them on all the teams and they have no free time because I've signed them up for everything imaginable. That's easy to say. There's an outward reality to that. If my kids are booked, I've done my job as a parent. That's easy, right? Those are all very tangible. But they have very little to do with living profoundly. It's a lot harder to see. This is something, if you know me and my family, I've had to wrestle with. You know, when Becca was pregnant with our first son, Charlie, you know, I was picturing teaching him how to program computers and tinker with electronics and doing carpentry and all of the myriad things that I like to do if I ever get any free time. Didn't know what he'd be interested in, but, you know, I wasn't going to force him into anything. Wasn't going to force him to love basketball. Well, maybe the Texas Longhorns. I was going to force that. But I was just expose him to all of these things and see what sticks. But after 3 years and counting of seizures, messing up his brain, the side effects of medications, he may never be able to understand those things. He may never be able to program computers or tinker with electronics. He may never be able to drive a car. He may never be able to meet someone and spend the rest of his life with. No Clip-Clop the Wonder Horse, no sports team, no special book, no club is ever going to make that okay. That's hard as a parent to consider. And so I have to believe that there is more to living profoundly without all those things. And sure, we've got another son. Caleb's smart as a whip. He'll be happy to boss you around if you let him. And he probably will be able to program computers or tinker with electronics or learn carpentry and drive a car and meet someone and get a job and all of those things. He probably will. But I still think living profoundly for him will have very little to do with all of those things. In Jesus' most important sermon, he says, "Seek first God's kingdom and God's righteousness, and all of these things shall be yours as well." In other words, whenever our faith is first, we can see everything else in proper perspective. A profound life starts with knowing what is most important. When you have your eyes on the ultimate destination, everything else becomes more simple. If you think of life as a series of intersections, you know, we're driving the car of our life and we're coming to intersections, and every intersection we can go left, we can go right, we can go forward, maybe we can U-turn, maybe if no one's looking we can back up and choose another intersection. But how do you decide which way to go? Or think about it this way. When you're going to drive somewhere, you don't know how to get there, you pull up your GPS to put in, what do you have to put in first? The destination. Otherwise, your GPS can't help you at all. It can't tell you which way to turn if it doesn't know where you're headed. By entering that destination, that's where you know where to go. Seek first God's kingdom. Seek first God's righteousness, and all of these other things will be yours as well. So how can you focus on God's kingdom and God's righteousness as the destination? And how can you help your kid or your grandkid do that as well? That's the most important thing if you want them to be happy. Paul, in our first text today, showed a byproduct of knowing your destination. He said that he rejoiced in the Lord greatly. He had inward joy. He found reasons to delight in life, regardless of his circumstances. Another time in the Bible, we see that he's singing in prison, and it's annoying his captors how happy he is in prison. When he's under house arrest in Rome, he is celebrating, because that means that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, there is someone chained to him who cannot ignore him as he's talking to them. What a great opportunity for Jesus. And that's where the church in Rome starts, is the conversion he does for those Roman centurions that can't escape him because they're chained to him. He's happy about that. Now, of course, he would rather not be in jail. He was trying to go to Spain to start churches there, but he found joy even in prison. He learned how to cultivate that attitude of gratitude. It was a choice. It was a skill that he learned. How can you help your kid or your grandkid have that orientation of joy? Paul also said that he learned how to be content. And it's interesting that, you know, he didn't just find contentment in poverty. He didn't say, "I gave away everything I had and I was happier then." No, he said that he knew what it was to have little and he knew what it was to have much. His contentment didn't require that he have masses of things, and his contentment didn't require that he give away all of his things either. He knew contentment in either way. Psychologists call this resiliency. They say that that involves things like having a positive self-view, viewing change as just a part of life, not getting too worked up about it, keeping things in perspective, helping others, celebrating even tiny progress toward your goal. That's what builds that resiliency, that attitude of contentment, whether you have plenty or you have want or anything in between. That can be learned. So how can you help your kid or your grandkid or yourself cultivate that sense of resiliency? Finally, Jesus shows his disciples that God's kingdom isn't just about, you know, going with the flow, living on island time, staying chill. It's also about having grit, the ability to continue despite opposition. He tells his disciples, there are going to be times where you extend peace to people and it will be rejected. Don't be surprised about that. So go out of the town, shake the dust off your feet, and keep going. Don't quit. Don't say, oh, that's okay. Just keep at your mission and move on. It's like finding that a road is closed and you have to follow a detour. Are you going to just head home? Or are you going to try to follow the detour to get to your destination? That requires commitment. That requires grit. How can you cultivate that commitment to reaching your final destination? How can you help your kid or your grandkid do that? Sisters and brothers, the discipline of simplicity requires deep insight into the nature of life. It requires knowing your ultimate destination. It requires seeking God's kingdom and God's righteousness first so that everything else can fall into place. Once you are committed to that as your final destination, that's when you can find inward joy, resilient character, and the grit to keep at it. That's what results in happiness. Not clip-clop the Wonder Horse, not books in the house. That is what makes you happier. That's what makes us MacGyvers in life, able to take whether we have a paperclip and some duct tape or a whole lot more than that and find the simple solution to life through it. And that's my special challenge to the fathers and the grandfathers. We probably even have some great-grandfathers here today. If you become a MacGyver in life, pointed toward the simple purpose of God's kingdom and God's righteousness, that's when you can help your kids, your grandkids, your great-grandkids do the same. Your goal isn't to provide them the latest stuff. Your goal isn't to help them get on all the latest teams. Your goal is to promote profound living with or without masses of things. Amen.